This is the Education Gadfly Show.
In a way, you're better off than Kanye. You know why?
Why's that?
You are not $53 million in the hole.
What does Gadfly say?
Hello, this is your host, Robert Ponticio of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now please join me in welcoming my co-host, the Kanye West. You're already laughing.
Jeez.
Brandon Light.
That's a complicated labeling.
In a way, you're better off than Kanye. You know why?
Why's that?
You are not $53 million in the hole.
That's true.
More money, more problems. Actually, less money, more problems.
I feel like I can't even comment on this.
He's asking Mark Zuckerberg for money.
I saw. And Larry Page, I think.
Ask Taylor Swift. He made her famous, right? Ask Taylor Swift. She's got $53 million lying around.
She might. And she has a Grammy.
Yeah, but, I mean, wouldn't it be sweet if Taylor Swift bailed out Kanye West? I'm make no bones about it. Did you see the Grammys?
I fast forward. I DVR'd it, and then I watched the performances.
Okay.
Kendrick's was really good.
Mm-hmm.
I think he should have won Album of the Year. Apparently, there's Record of the Year and Album of the Year, and Record of the Year is the Song of the Year.
And by the way,
the record comes last. It seems like the album would be more important than the Song of the Year.
And when was the last time you bought either a record or an album?
I buy them digitally, and I do buy vinyls sometimes.
Yeah, back in the day, before you were an adult, there were these things called albums and records.
I buy them. I just told you. I actually got a nice record player for Christmas from my wife.
Really?
Yeah.
Throwback. It's a hipster thing.
Yes. Kind of. Although I've heard that hipsters no longer exist. It's like hipsters are no more or something.
Ding dong, the hipster's dead.
It was like a 2015, 2014 thing or something.
it was a big thing back when Kanye was. Okay. Time to play Pardon the Gadfly. Clara, take it away.
A decade has passed since No Child Left Behind started the education reform movement. How have school policies changed since then?
What do you think, Brandon?
We have better standards. We have better tests. We have higher bars.
Higher cut scores.
Right. But we still need better accountability.
That's a complicated question, isn't it? And I guess we should note we're alluding to a piece that our esteemed colleagues, Michael Petrilli and Checker Finn, had, I think, in the Washington Post, and we'll have it in the
game. Yeah, I basically just parroted what they said right there.
And their point, and look, they've been in this game both longer than you and I combined, I think.
Much longer than me.
The point that they make is like, look, back in the day of No Child Left Behind and its predecessors, we had the road to hell paved with good intentions, and that what drove policy. And whether you love reform or hate reform, we have gotten better since then.
Mm-hmm.
Standards, they existed back then, but they were kind of vague and imprecise. Tests encouraged bad practice.
Tests weren't all that good sometimes.
Yeah. So. They tended to encourage, a little bit more, rote memorization, for example. So now we have uniform higher standards. We have tests that are a lot more challenging, and more to the point, we have these higher cut scores. So, this is something that would happen when I was teaching in New York, where a colleague of mine, Diana Seneschal, literally showed that you could guess your way at random and still pass. That is done, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. Although, we still need to find a way to better hold schools and students and teachers accountable. I think ESSA has made some progress by removing the mandate to tie teacher accountability to test scores. That was definitely a politically poisonous policy, especially when you have bad tests.
Right.
So now it's up to states to do what they think is best, and I think that's also progress.
I've said this on the podcast many times. I have a very complicated relationship with testing and accountability. So it's one thing to say, as they did, that states have more latitude to design systems that distinguish between strong and weak schools. But as ever, the devil is in the details. The thing that keeps me up at night about all this is, as long as we are determined to try to attach individual teacher efficacy to test scores in any way, shape, or form, my concern is that's a slippery slope that leads to all these bad impacts of the testing tail wagging the schooling dog, as it were. In other words, it's like being a little bit pregnant. I'm not sure that we can do that. So I will be watching very carefully this year to see whether states, hopefully some of them, will get this right and give teachers the incentive, properly incentivize teachers to still be accountable while not being utterly dominated by the test.
Sure.
Love the test, have no problem with the data, but do not love the testing impact on schooling.
Sure.
Number two, Claire.
All right. Although DCPS has been praised for its rising test scores, poor students in the district don't seem to be doing much better than poor kids nationally. Mm-hmm. Are gentrification and changing demographics the real cause for recent success?
What a fascinating, fascinating piece of research. Did you see this, Brandon?
I did.
From our good friend Matthew Ladner at the Heritage Institute or Foundation. Mm-hmm. Summarize for those of us who have not heard this.
So he showed that over time, a lot of the gains in the city of DC are mostly for students who aren't eligible for free and reduced price lunch.
Yeah, and when you say mostly, by the way, I mean overwhelming.
Yeah, so if you look at just DC public schools, the kids who are eligible for free and reduced price lunch, they essentially are at the national average in terms of how much they've gained, whereas the kids who aren't eligible, they've added 39 percentage points, it looks like this says, compared to 8 for the country on average.
Right.
But there, we're only talking about DC public schools. We're not talking about DC charter schools. And DC charter schools, which make up about half of the schools in DC, they've done a lot better. Both for kids who are eligible and not eligible for free and reduced price lunch. So kids across kind of the economic spectrum.
Yeah, it's troubling, right? Because if you think, I mean, D.C., and this goes back to the day when Michelle Rhee was here, D.C. made itself the kind of the white hot locus of education reform. So this is where all the reformer energy and I mean, an untold amount of tax dollars went into improving things. And what seems to have improved is maybe housing a little bit. You know, D.C. became a more attractive place to live. And I'm extrapolating from Matthew Ladner's research here, but if to the degree to which folks came to D.C. to live and work and were more comfortable sending their kids to public schools, that seems to be where the gains are. That that says something about our reform efforts here in D.C. and something maybe not so good.
And based on what he found, I don't think you can argue with that. The one thing I would like to compliment the district on is how well they've worked with charter schools.
Absolutely.
That is rare. There are only a few other cities in the entire country where districts have even done anything like this, Denver and New Orleans, and that's about it, where charter schools have kind of been allowed to spread. Mm-hmm. And in DC, a big part of that is that the district works kind of side by side, cooperatively, even though they compete cooperatively with charter schools. And the district should really be given credit for doing that.
Absolutely. Whatever works for kids. But there was a line that Matthew wrote at Jay Green's blog, which I'll quote because I think this hits the nail on the head. He writes, "What is going on in DC is both complex, partially encouraging, and in the end, very disturbing."
Sure.
Number three, Clara.
Success Academy is under fire again for the rip and redo video leaked by a former teacher's assistant in New York. An NYU professor called this behavior abusive teaching. Do you agree?
Do I agree that it's abusive teaching? Boy, we have to be really careful here, because on the one hand, you look at the results that Success Academy has put up, and I've written about this plenty over the years, and you are blown away by them, right? I mean, I've said this in the past. They are not doing incrementally better than other schools in New York City, even other good schools. They are doing geometrically better.
So schools everywhere.
True enough. Than schools everywhere. So there is some secret sauce at Success Academy that a lot of people wish they knew, including, frankly, me. So that makes you clearly the object of envy. You know, when you were just putting up numbers that are just, you know, off the charts, people want to know why. You make yourself the object of scrutiny, and every little twitching thing that you do is going to come under fire. Now, that said, you know, this particular video, I think, really did raise eyebrows among people who would consider themselves Success Academy supporters. I would say the reaction to this, it falls into two camps. People who say, this is very disturbing, and people who say, this is very disturbing, however. And I think as closely watched as anything has been Success Academy's reaction to this. Eva Moskowitz, again, whether you love her or hate her, she's an enormously polarizing figure. She did not back down. If I'm not mistaken, they suspended the teacher for a week and a half or so and then put her back in the classroom. Eva Moskowitz held a press conference. She said, if I'm quoting her correctly, I'm tired of apologizing. She defended the teacher. She said, this is is a teacher who has produced tremendous results for kids. Parents want her back, etc. So she is brazening it out, so to speak. Dorrell Bradford wrote a piece in the 74 basically challenging Eva Moskowitz's critics, say, you don't like this? Well, what's your solution? Give us your model, you know, but produce these same results. So this has become yet another one of those kind of Rorschach tests about Eva Moskowitz. I think, again, people are very reluctant, and I'm certainly not going to defend the conduct of this teacher. It makes you uncomfortable when you see the video, but then there is still the fact of those extraordinary scores and schools, and the fact that she is doing what those of us in the reform movement have been saying for decades can be done to get low-income black and brown kids to the same achievement level and higher than affluent kids. But boy, has she painted a bullseye on herself, and boy, are they under scrutiny.
Yes, they are.
That's all we're getting out of Brandon today on this one. You don't want to touch this.
No, I mean, it'll be interesting to see kind of what happens going forward with this and with No Excuses Schools and everything that's kind of involved directly or indirectly in this controversy, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, look, part of me does sympathize tremendously with success on this, because they are essentially now a de facto school district, and I don't know where they would be if you looked at them as a school district. They'd be a good mid-sized school district. It is impossible to go into any school or district of that size and not find somebody on some given day doing something that is probably not ideal practice, but the point is now, boy, the long knives are out, and people are going to be looking for this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all the time we have for Pardon the Gadfly. Now it's time for everybody's favorite, Amber's Research Minute. How you doing, Amber?
I'm great, thank you.
Let me ask, did you watch the Grammys this weekend?
I did not.
You're not a Grammy girl?
I just didn't. I mean, usually, you know, women watch it for the outfits, let me just be honest.
Oh.
But I missed the outfits, I missed the Grammys, I missed everything.
This was the first year watching the Grammys where I think I was unfamiliar with at least half of the nominees.
I read it The Martian.
The Weeknd.
And
the heck is
and
The Weeknd?
Martian, have you guys seen that yet?
I have not seen that yet.
Okay, well, anyway.
I have, it's good.
It's Matt Damon
we don't
on
do
Mars.
Matt Damon movies.
I've read the book too.
Oh, you read the Dara said it was better.
Yeah.
The book was better. Which
I agree.
Is always the case. As a former English teacher, the book is always better.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's what I was doing. So the Grammys, probably better use of my time, I'm guessing.
Okay. By the way, after the podcast, we're taking up a collection to retire Kanye West debt. It's $53 million. Hopefully you can contribute maybe two or three
months. I don't think I'm giving him any my hard-earned cash.
You are tough.
Anyhow, you want to know what I got for you this
week? Let's hear it.
All right. I got a new study from Harvard called Teaching Higher, Educators' Perspectives on Common Core Implementation. Everybody's doing Common Core work, including us. But this survey, they analyzed a random sample of 4th through 8th grade educators, about 1,600 of them in 5 states, Delaware, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Mexico, and Nevada, if you care about that. They asked them a bunch of questions about their PD and materials and teaching strategies and so on. There's a whole bunch of data around the frequencies about what the survey found, but I'm going to concentrate on the back end of the study, which is they basically created all these like little indices from the survey responses. Mm-hmm. And those indices were things like principal is leading Common Core implementation, okay, things like that. And then you put a bunch of questions together that sort of equal that, okay? And then they use those indices to analyze the link between each index and student performance on PART and Smarter Balance, which is kind of interesting, right?
Okay, that is interesting.
So they were able to link the teacher survey responses to their students' test scores in 2014, 2015 PARC and Smarter Balanced Assessment Administration, okay?
I'm with you.
And they controlled for students' baseline scores, they controlled for their characteristics, they controlled of the scores and characteristics of their classroom peers. On the teacher side, they controlled for her value-added score in the prior year, so on and so forth. But regardless, this is still a correlational study, okay? We're looking at the link between these indices and student achievement on PARC and Smarter Balance.
And there was something, correlation is not, what is it again?
Causation.
That's it, there you go.
The bottom line is that they find more statistically significant relationships for math than English. I'd be curious to get your opinion on that. Specifically, 3 indices were related to student achievement in math. Number one, the frequency and specificity of feedback from classroom observations. Number two, the number of days of professional development. Number three, the inclusion of student performance on Common Core aligned assessments in teacher evaluations.
I'm not sure I know what that means.
So, for example, that's really good that you asked me that. A 100-point difference in the percentage of teachers reporting that student test scores on a Common Core aligned assessment. And this can be, it doesn't have to be PARC or Smarter Balance. Mm-hmm. It can be a formative or interim assessment, maybe a benchmark thing sure. that the school district's using. If that plays a role, that's the wording on the survey, if it plays a role in their formal evaluation, that was linked to a 0.18 standard deviation difference in achievement on PARC or Smarter Balance okay, math so test.
Not a huge effect, not but not
huge,
nothing.
Not a huge, right. And keep in mind, this is the difference between schools where 0% of teachers reported having had that and okay. schools where 100% reported having that. So it's a pretty generous measure, I think, okay. is what I'm saying. In math, they also found that the use of the textbook Go Math was positively related to student performance. And in ELA, this is a head scratcher. The only index that predicted student performance on PARC or Smarter Balanced was school context, which was the degree to which teachers perceive school as a pleasant place to work.
Stop it.
That's it.
Really? Well, see, now this is interesting because I'm always the guy who says, you know, that one, I love curriculum effects. So even though I don't know the Go Math program that well, anytime somebody takes the time to demonstrate a curriculum effect, that makes me happy.
Yes.
But boy, that's a strange, of all the things.
It's a head scratcher. Yeah. Anyway, I'm almost done. They try to throw an optimistic bone at the end for the ELA folks. And because teachers actually report 86% say they've increased their attention on writing. And the obviously the old state tests, I know this because we just did this huge assessment study.
I heard.
Don't tend to focus on writing, but the sure. new assessments do a lot better job. So obviously they're hoping that, you know, this is going to help with the writing link. So just last thing, what's not linked to student achievement was also interesting, right? So all these other indices that they didn't report on. Mm-hmm. But one was whether the school was fully embracing the Common Core, whether teachers, well, what it wasn't linked either way, whether yeah. they were or weren't.
And I wonder how they define that. It was
a principal survey, like a, okay. your own, all you right. know. Teachers developing materials with their colleagues, teachers describing that they had substantial shifts in their instruction, and teacher collaboration. So there's all these things that you would think might be linked to student achievement right. that weren't shown, but again, it's just a correlation. But they did find these like classroom observations, PD, and this teacher eval thing that were linked.
So it was interesting.
So what?
What do you make of that?
So I'm here to ask you that.
but, see how I did
but,
that?
Yeah, yeah.
But
I think it's squishy, right? The number
right, exactly.
of PD, like that is so squishy because we know like yeah. what the heck is the PD about?
Sure.
Is it any good? And we've got a whole pile of dusty old studies that say PD is meaningless.
Right.
And
yeah.
we don't, teachers don't even, like they categorize everything as that. So like, I have no idea what to make of that.
Yeah.
And the eval one, as I mentioned, is sort of squishy because it can be interim, formative, it can be kind of anything.
Yep.
And so that's a little squishy. And then this other one, what was my third one, was specificity of feedback from classroom observation. Now, I kind of like that one.
I do like that one. I mean, what this is suggesting to me, and I'm hearing this cold, is that in schools where the lights are turned on, so to speak, and an emphasis is being placed on giving teacher feedback, and there's a culture of evaluation and mm-hmm. teacher development, it sounds like that's bearing some fruit.
It does. I think that's very fair. I like that sort of, you know, takeaway.
Yeah. yeah.
I think the data actually support that. They don't dig into exactly what the feedback looks like, but we hear a lot about that, right? And I think that's a positive thing that's come out of the accountability movement and the teacher right. evaluation movement is if you're going to evaluate a teacher, make it worth their while,
right?
right? Give them feedback that they're going to be able to use. Don't just check like that, like my first
evaluation
year.
Evaluation by checklist.
Checklist. Right, and then right. you look at it and you're like, yay, I did fine, but you absolutely no feedback. So in the places where that's occurring and it's meaningful, it does seem like there is a link to student achievement, which is good news.
It is good news. It's a small effect size, obviously,
that's right.
but it seems directionally intriguing. So
yes.
let's find out more.
That's exactly right. And I really like that we're able to make these ties between test scores, right, and mm-hmm. sort of hearing from the educators that there actually might be a link between what teachers are doing or say they're doing and how their kids are doing. So that's kind of a cool line of research to pursue.
Good. All right. But why those states, by the way? They seem like a crazy
I think they were able
states.
To link the survey responses to the student achievement test scores.
Just where the data was available.
Yeah, where okay. the data were available. That's right.
Okay. And that's all the time we have for this week's Gadfly Show. Till next week.
Brandon Wright.
And I'm Robert Pondicio for the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. Signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.